Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia.
I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you doing today?
Absolutely super, Ron. It's a beautiful day here. Nice sunny skies. Can't ask for a better day.
I'm telling you what, it's really nice in the fall. Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're going to be featuring Ben Hudson, the author of the groundbreaking book, Finding Work When There Are No Jobs. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
I sure will, Ron. Today, our sponsor is Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing is your one-stop source for all your marketing, sales, and business development needs. We customize and implement a business strategy to help build your business, grow your sales, and encourage your success.
That's super. Well, you know, with Ben Hudson is a really a unique resource. He's got over 40 years of practical, tactical experience in a Fortune 500 company, an international agency, business development consulting, and executive career coaching and small business startups. He's worked with over 1,000 individuals and 250-plus successful startups. The solutionship process that's outlined in his newly released book, Finding Work Where There Are No Jobs, is really a distillate of the 10 years of hands-on coaching that he's had and is the foundation of his successful coaching practice. It's a time-tested, proven method of finding profitable work in the worst economy since the Great Depression and a much-needed process in today's marketplace. So welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you, Ron. It's good to be here.
Well, Ben, it's great to have you. Tell us a little bit about how you came up with the idea for your book.
Well, it's going to be a little bit of a process, if you don't mind. It sort of evolved over a period of time. For about 20 years, I did management consulting work, and I was extremely unsuccessful for the first couple of years because I let my ego get in my way, and I was trying to do it my way rather than go out and check out some of the processes that maybe worked. But I eventually sort of worked into a way of finding work and then a way of helping deliver value for some of my clients, and it began to work. And that was really the beginning of this thing we call the solutionship. After about 4 or 5 years, I began to be pretty successful at it, and I also picked up a client, one of the largest outplacement companies in the world, actually, and they asked me to develop their entrepreneurial program for them, which I did, and I wound up not only developing it but implementing it for about 10, 12 years. And over that time, I worked with about 1,000 folks and also had hands-on relationships with about 250 successful startups. But I continued to refine this process and with the help of all the folks I worked with, and it began to seem like I was getting feedback that the process really was something unusual. I didn't think it was because I'd been doing it myself, but I had been successful at it. Anyway, about a year and a half ago, I got to a point where I was ready to make some changes in my life and try to contribute as best I could for the time that the Lord leaves me here. And I decided I was going to unwind my consulting practice and back away from my relationship with this outplacement company and just do some seminars based around this solutionship process to help as many folks as I could find profitable work in this time where there doesn't seem to be any jobs. Now, basically what the solutionship process is it's a – I'll get into that in a bit. But the seminars went extremely well, and I kept getting encouragement from some of the folks that had been attending them and some of the folks that had were aware of it to write a book. You're going to do this thing, you're going to write a book, it gives you credibility. So I don't know how to write a book. Don't want to write a book. But I kept thinking about it. You know, it might be an interesting experience to go through. And I figured I got it all in my head anyway. I could knock it out in a month or so. Well, it was 4.5 months by the time I first sat down with my pen and the time that we got the book ready to go to the printer. But it turned out extremely well, and I initially had no idea how I was going to use the book. Quite honestly, I thought I was going to still continue to use it to build seminars around. If we sold a few books, fine. I'm not in this thing for the money. Honestly, I really am here to help folks. And we had the book printed up, and this response has been so good, we've gotten together and decided we're going to take it a step further. and go make it available on the website in printed form and go do an e-book and so forth. So.
Well, Ben, you know, chapter two of your book is entitled An Inverted Marketplace. Inverted Marketplace, could you explain what that means to our listeners?
Yeah. Actually, I watched the job market and the job search marketplace evolve extensively over the last 3 or 4 years. We've all seen it, but I was engaged in it, so I was probably more aware than most. But for years and years, if we were looking for a job, the process was pretty straightforward. We packaged ourselves up as prettily as possible. I don't know if that's a word or not, but I'm from the South. Went by getting a slick-looking resume or several slick-looking resumes and developed an interview that we felt like would make us look good. And sort of presented ourselves as a solution looking for a problem. And for a few years, it seemed to work, but over the last 3 or 4 years, it just doesn't work anymore. And it occurred to me that this process that I've been using to develop project consulting work seemed to fit today's marketplace extremely well. And it also occurred to me that the marketplace has just turned upside down. You can't present yourself as a solution for looking for a problem today and be successful. You've literally got to do what every business, since businesses have started, have had to do. You've got to find the need and then go fill the need. And the good news is there are an awful lot of needs out there. And it is lots of folks, really a lot smarter than I am, don't see it yet as being an inverted marketplace, but it definitely is.
So, you know, today if somebody really just is looking for a job, which means they want to get paid, they're really going to have to take on some of the characteristics of being an entrepreneur in order to, you know, get a temporary engagement before they can get something permanent.
Ron, you're exactly right. It is an entrepreneurial approach to looking for work and to generating short-term income.
In fact, there was an article in the USA Today last week, I think it was, or maybe first part of this week, about outsourcing and how companies are outsourcing and people are being really more entrepreneurial, and it's changing the way jobs, you know, my boys are 18 and 21, and it's changing the way their jobs they're going to get are, and the way they're going to get them are going to be so much different from the way I got them and Ron got them.
There's no question.
You got them.
You're exactly right. We can't just present ourselves, as I say, as a solution. We've got to go help them surface their needs and then come back to them with a proposal, if you will, where you can be a potential resource provider. And I emphasize that word potential. We'll get into that a little bit later when I start talking about the solutions process. But where there's no obligation on their part to hire me initially.
You know, Ben, being a sales and marketing guy that I have in my whole career, I was really intrigued by Chapter 3 and tell our listeners a little bit about it and why you titled it Knowing What You Have to Sell. I think that's really neat.
Well, when we go to the marketplace looking for work, if you will, we're really selling ourselves. We are the product. And most everything all of us have bought over the years and where we've reached for our hip pocket, we've bought those products and or services for the benefits that we feel they can provide us. I mean, we didn't buy a shirt because it had buttons on it. We didn't buy a car because it had black rubber things at each corner and a round thing that you turn to get around the corners. We bought the car, for instance, for you like the acceleration, you like the gas mileage, you like the way you look in the doggone thing. You bought the shirt because your wife thought you looked good in it. So those are benefits. And when you go to market, you've got to know what your benefits are. And our resumes typically just list our background and don't get into the benefits. They assume that the person that reads that thing is going to be able to distill from your experience what your benefits are and apply them to their particular needs. And they just won't take time to do that today. You know?
Yeah, it's very true. I do a lot of speaking around the country, and I always talk about the benefits. And I always tell people the one thing I really can promise you is that if you're not going to benefit the person that you're trying to sell, they're not going to buy.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
No question about that. But once we have a chapter in the book that shows folks how they can determine what their benefits are, But once you've determined that, what you don't want to do is just, again, dump them in front of a prospect and expect them to distill through there and figure out what their needs, how it's going to meet their needs. That's just another way of bringing a solution that, to the marketplace looking for looking for a solution. I mean, a solution looking for a problem.
That's true. You know, the next chapter, chapter four of your book is entitled Creating Value. Now, what exactly does creating value mean?
Well, this process really is the marketplace calls it a temp to perm. But it can be three things. You can use it as a process to generate short-term income, to bridge you into any other area that you're interested in, small businesses, for instance. It can be get you into a building or help you build a consulting practice. Or it can be a way into permanent employment. There are very few permanent employment jobs out there today. Permanent employment is a dirty word. And this allows you to come into an organization and get engaged with the decision makers and demonstrate your ROI before they make a commitment to you in terms of a long-term job position, if there's one ever one available. There are fewer and fewer available, and outplacement is becoming a way of life.
You know, Ben, in Chapter 5, it's titled A Different Approach. What is unique about your approach, and maybe explain what your approach is to our listeners?
The approach is different. The elements in the program, in most cases, we've been taught over the years, but I have found as I get a little older, we don't need teaching nearly as much as we need reminding. But the way we utilize the process is really the reason it's been so effective. It is extremely effective and proven effective and actually guaranteed effective. I tell everybody that if you try the process and you don't like it, come back to me, and if you bought a book, I'll refund your money if you've utilized it properly. But it is the primary reason that it's different is the mindset is different. You're not there to sell anything. You're there to help people. And that's a difficult transition for lots of folks, but we talk a lot in the book about how you go there. In today's marketplace, people are to shy away from folks that are trying to sell them something. Nobody wants to buy anything. But they tend to be open to somebody who presents himself simply as a friend there to help them if they can. And if there's any opportunity for some involvement beyond that, that'd be great. But there's no obligation at the outset for them to consider hiring or buying anything.
Yeah, well, chapter six of your book is, you know, the real heart and the real meat of the book. You know, what is the solution ship process, and how'd you come up with the word solution ship?
Ron, it's exactly what it says. It's a solution developed in partnership with your client. And what we do is to be effective today, they've got to have some ownership of the project. And we try to go in and help them surface the opportunities in partnership and then allow them to take the ownership of the activity. And then we come alongside them and make them look like a hero. I guess heroin is out of style today. But
So what exactly is that solutionship process?
Well, it's... We first of all show folks how to get the most important thing is getting in front of the right people. I laughingly say when I spent a number of years over at the Coca-Cola company, and like all major companies, there's an area downstairs where the vendors can come in and report back to headquarters after they've been in meetings there. And we used to walk in and listen to the discussions back home. And Coke's got probably 100 conference rooms in that building over there. They don't have as many now as they used to have, but they used to have the best and the brightest all over that building. The MBAs, just everybody had one. And you could go in and you'd find some guy or a couple of guys calling back to the home office, and almost always you'd hear things like, we just had a great meeting, had 8 MBAs in there. everybody was on the same page. We just love what we're going to do. We're going to make a fortune over here. But the reason I laugh is because I guarantee you, in most cases, there was not a decision maker sitting there, somebody who could okay the invoice.
Right, the guy that writes the check.
That's right. You've got to get in front of the right people, and we talk a lot about how do you do that. And once you get in front of them, you've got to position yourself as a resource in a way that doesn't look like you're selling yourself or selling anything, for that matter. And we do that. And we help them surface their needs, and then we come back to them with some ideas, and we always call them ideas. People love ideas because they don't sound like it'll cost them any money. But we come back to them with some ideas around how they might utilize you as a potential resource. And we also say we always position those ideas in a way that, and like, this scares a lot of people initially, but it always works. We tell them up front that we're not here to sell a thing. And I also qualified by saying, you know, you hear that probably from everybody that comes in to see you. But honestly, we are not. When we go through this process and we surface the ideas and you feel like you like some of the ideas or one of the ideas, but you don't feel like the time is proper to bring somebody else in or you got the internal resources to do it yourself, the idea is yours. And you have no obligation to me. And I get a lot of laughing. You're going to give me that. It must not be very good.
You know, Ben, how would you correlate your solutionship process from selling a service to selling a product?
It correlates very easily. I mean, when you're selling a service and a product, you're selling a package of benefits, basically. It really doesn't matter whether you're selling a manufactured product or service.
Okay. What do you think the biggest hurdles are for people to implement the solution process?
Well, there's no question. The single biggest hurdle is very easy to determine, and it's practice. If the solutionship process is not delivered in a way that is a conversational approach, it won't work. If it comes off at any point in time like a sales pitch, if you slide into a sales pitch during the conversation, the defenses go up, and immediately the whole conversation changes, and mostly you'll get something like, well, once you leave us your resume, we'll get back to you when time comes. Because you got to, throughout the entire process, they got to look at you as a potential resource until they make the decision to go forward. And that's really the final piece of the thing is the closing piece. Nobody likes to be closed. So I just let them close themselves. And you ask, how do you do that? When we get to a point where we're sort of on the same page, and I use that in the presentation as outlined in the book, but I say, look, it sounds to me like we're sort of on the same page here. Would you agree? They could give me three answers. The first one is the one I want to hear. They say something like, well, maybe we are fairly close. The second one would be, no, I think we need some more information, da, 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 da. And the third one would be, no, it's not the right time to do this. I appreciate you coming in, but we can't do it. But in all three of those things, I want to keep them open as a potential networking contact. But the first answer, if they say, well, it sounds like we've got, might have some potential here, but I need to know so-and-so and so-and-so. And at that point in time, I say, well, look, you know, the decision is not mine. What do you think next steps are? And if they start talking to me, I don't have the boat fishing the boat yet, but I got him on the hook. And at that point in the time, that's when I just assume that preemptively is too strong a word, but proactively is where we are. Well, I proactively assume that we got something going, and I do it. If the answer is the number two answer, then I say, well, what information do you need? And I keep it alive by saying, well, I'll be back to you in 2 weeks with that information, and we'll go forward. And the third one, I say, look, let me just write you a letter outlining what we've discussed, and I'll stay in touch with you. And it's worked very well.
Yeah, well, Ben, I know that when you first sit down with folks that you use the SWOT approach of SWOT. Can you kind of walk us through how you do that?
Sure.
You know what it means.
I'm sorry?
What does SWAT mean?
And what it means, too. Many of our listeners won't know what SWAT is.
Well, SWAT's been around a long time. SWAT, SWOT, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats, was the foundation for the traditional sales pitch or pitches that people use for the, have been used for the last 20 years. It's sort of an evolvement of that. But what I do is when I get in front of somebody who's a decision maker and we get through the social stuff, I'll tell them, as I said earlier, we're not here to sell a thing, and if we go through this exercise and you find some things you like, they're yours to keep. But when I say all I'd really like to do is take about 30 minutes and ask you a few questions about your business. And would you mind? And their response would is usually, well, it depends on the questions, but I guess not. The first question is in the strength area, and it's designed to do nothing but make them comfortable talking to me about their business, not to get any information at all. But the question I always ask is, today's economy is tough. Everybody's having a hard time. But I'm sure you got some things that you're proud of. Talk to me a little bit about some things that you are proud of in your business right now and help them to brag. You'll see them relax. And sometimes you have to just get them to stop talking. Once you get into that mode of talking about the good things. But when I get to a point in that conversation where they are bragging a little bit, and I can honestly compliment them, not a placating thing and not something that sounds like it's manipulative, but an honest compliment. I'll use that as a bridge to the second area, which is really the red meat area of the thing. But I'll say something like, that's great. I can certainly understand why you're proud of that. In today's economy, that's a great accomplishment. But while we're here, if you don't mind, talk to me, and I always say talk to me, I never say tell me, but talk to me a little bit about some of the things that you think you might like to see some improvement in. And that's when I start taking notes. Now, I only look for two or three, no more than two or three areas of improvement. Now, the reason for that is if you get a whole laundry list of things, you get into a prioritization issue at some point in time, and it'll stop the process. But usually the first two or three are the most important anyway. But once I've gotten those two or three areas where they'd like to see some improvement, I move quickly from there to the O section by saying something like, well, I appreciate you talking to me about those things. Let me make a suggestion. Let me think about that a little bit and come back to you with some ideas. But before I leave, talk to me a little bit about some areas where you see opportunities for your business, but you currently aren't able, for whatever reasons, to take advantage of them. And that opens up some stuff that's a little easier for them to talk about and gives me some more meat, too. When we get through that, then I give we'll go to the T section of the SWOT analysis, which in the old SWOT analysis was the threat section. It's not so much the threat section now, but it gives you a nice way to close and walk out of there in a unique way, and I'll explain that in a second. But anyway, once we've talked about the opportunities that they see that they aren't able to take advantage of, and usually they all come down to money, time, people, and so forth, my final question is, well, talk to me a little about why are you not able to take advantage of them? And as I said, they'll start talking about the money and the time and the people. And when we get through that, I get comfortable, he gets comfortable, or she gets comfortable, I do something that's really totally unexpected, and it's a little bit unusual in a sales pitch. I leave. What I'll do is I say, look, it's been a great conversation. Let me make a suggestion. Let me think about it for a couple of days and come back to you with some ideas. People don't like for potential resources to start talking solutions too soon. Everybody thinks their business is unique. And you start talking solutions early, or too early in the process, and they say you're just dragging something off the shelf that you've used everywhere else. And that just doesn't work. And I found out the hard way it doesn't work because I did that when I first started my consulting practice. But once I get to that point and I say, let me come back to them in a couple of days with some ideas. And as I said, most people look at ideas as something they like to discuss. They don't look like it might cost them any money. And I've never had anybody turn that down. And if they say, well, what does that look like? I'll say, well, no, let's see, today is Friday. What does Tuesday look like? I try to do it within 5 working days. And the reason's obvious. You get and spread out any further than that, they've forgotten the whole process. They get too busy running their business or trying to impact their bottom line. But I'll set an appointment. And I'll just say, well, Tuesday afternoon, okay, talk about 3 o'clock. They say yes. If they do, I get up, stick my hand out, thank them for their time, say I'll see you Tuesday, and I walk out. I don't get any more conversations. I've had several people tell me over the years when they did that, they were a little bit shocked to see me walk out in the middle of a presentation because they thought that's when I was going to start talking solutions. But one guy said, Ben, you left me leaning in that process. And I've had a couple of folks over the years come back to me and say, you know, I was talking to another consultant when you came in here, and I told him that I was going to wait to make the decision until you came back with the ideas. And because he'd already made a proposal. So the process does. It puts you in a psychological position that where they're looking forward to you coming back to them. And what I do is I go away and I write them a letter. It's a personal letter. It is not a proposal, but I outline in that letter basically what we discussed and what the things that they'd like to see, improvements they'd like to see. And I outline what the steps would be if we went forward. And all projects can be broken into 4 steps. The first one is a discovery piece. The second one is a plan development piece. The third one is a plan implementation piece. And the fourth one is a metrics piece where everybody can keep up with what's going on. And I outline a little bit about each of those. And if possible, I come back to them with a range for pricing to give them an idea of what the investment was going to be. So what they really want to know is what I'm going to do for them, how long is it going to take, what their involvement is going to be and so forth, and how much they're going to have to budget for.
Okay. Well, you know, Ben, you know, the typical person that's going to be reading your book has probably got an employee mindset, and this is going to be a new skill for them. For them to become comfortable with and internalize the solutionship process, what do you recommend?
Well, as I say, it takes practice. But the good news is you don't need initially. What the proposal that I make to most folks, I have worked, as I said, with an awful lot of folks over the years. But it generally takes about 6 practice sessions for folks to get comfortable with the process enough for it to be a conversation. And you don't need to start off with some high-level proposal, high-level prospect. You just start with your friends and ask them for just feedback. Tell them the truth. You're thinking about doing some consulting, consulting project work, and got a process you'd like to get their feedback on. And that's all you're looking for the first 2 or 3. And once you get comfortable, then you can sort of move into the next level. These will be people that you know or folks that know them would recommend you. That may have some potential work there, but you tell them the same thing and honestly mean it. You're just looking for feedback from somebody who's in the business. But I've had a lot of people come back and say, you know, there might be some work here. But that's sort of the approach that I take. It's a little more detailed than that, but it's outlined completely in the book. It's very straightforward and by the numbers, but absolutely proven to work.
That's cool.
Yeah, you know, Ben, I think about listening to you, and one of the things that really comes to mind with me is the importance of really listening to people. I think so many people get talking and they just don't listen. Can you make any comments on that?
You're absolutely right. At the top of each of the chapters in my book, I've got a little quote that I've dug up with it that I think sort of sums up what we're trying to say in there. But the one in front of the chapter on creating value, I think it is, I forget now who. Anyway, it just says that I learned an awful lot I learned an awful lot when I just decided to pay attention.
Yep. It's just like we got one mouth and 2 ears, so we're supposed to listen twice as much as we talk.
Absolutely. Listening is absolutely. Asking the right questions, proactively facilitating the process, that's the key. Take the burden off them. Help them to come to the decisions, whether they're their decisions, and then come back to them with suggestions for ideas, where they're engaged in, and the whole process becomes theirs, and they see you just as a facilitator. But once you've got your foot in the door and establish yourself as a resource, it can lead to lots of things. It can lead to continuing project work. It could lead to a full-time job. If there's a full-time job available there, you'll be first in line.
That's right. Well, Ben, this is a really superb book. That's the timing on it's just really great and something that our listeners need. How can they get in touch with you?
Well, we don't have a website up yet, and we're in the process of putting together an e-book in addition to the hard copy book. But my they can get directly in touch with me, and I encourage them to do that. I'd be more than happy to talk to them or to talk, email. Just get in touch with me on my email. It's Bizda, B Boy I Z Zebra, D A Apple at, excuse me, Bizda number 3 at MSN.com. My telephone number is 678-362-8021, and I encourage them to call.
Okay. Well, this has really been great, Ben. Thanks for being on the show today. Our listeners really appreciate you sharing your experience and your insights.
Well, I've enjoyed it a lot, Ron. Thank you.
Okay, another great show, Bill.
Gosh, it really was, Ron. I really enjoyed that. Ben's solutionship plan is really, really cool, I think. I also want to give a special thanks to today's sponsor, Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. We go the extra step so you don't have to fret. Visit our website at entrepreneursales.com.
And to listen to this episode again, you can go to thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen to this show plus previous shows. This is Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.